Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone. Please be advised that aside from our usual filthy language, this conversation involves some talk around gun violence, suicidal ideation, and just some other difficult topics. It is a conversation about jail, and we talk, you know, a little bit about some of the crimes and some of the situations that have led the men into this situation, this prison. So just be aware. And if you don't feel like listening, please skip on over and listen to MILF Manor. That'll make things a lot better. All right. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Little Miss Recap, the podcast where we can't stop watching shows about jail. I am so into shows about jail, and I don't know why.
Like, yeah.
It's a morbid curiosity of mine because it's almost like something I'm terrified of.
Right.
But I'm so interested in.
Yeah. And it's just like a little fishbowl, I guess, where you could sort of see how humans interact.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like human watching. Guys, I'm Amy Archer. I'm here with Shebnam, and we're going to talk today about, what's the official name? Is it Unlocked, a Jail Experiment? I think so, right?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So this series is on Netflix, and it's getting a lot of buzz around it. Some controversy, which I'm sure we'll address, but also a lot of buzz. And the broad strokes of it are the sheriff in, oh my God, Arkansas.
Pulaski County, I think
Pulaski
it's pronounced.
Pulaski. Yeah.
Okay.
Like the bridge, right? Like Pulaski Bridge.
Oh, okay.
In New York, I think.
Maybe. I don't know.
How I know Pulaski Bridge in New York is my Graham, who has never left North Scranton, essentially, in her entire 80 years of her life.
Okay.
Moved to New Jersey for 1 week. In the 60s, because my, like, her sister lured her, my grandfather, out there, like, oh, come out and get a job with us, blah, blah, blah. So they go and they live in New Jersey somewhere. And my Graham says, they called her sister Auntie. Mm-hmm. Oh, Auntie took me over the Pulaski Skyway. And I remember thinking it was falling apart and it was a piece of shit. And she was talking about how great it was. And that was Graham's, like, only encounter with New York City, was going over the Pulaski Skyway. And she came back to her apartment, broke her foot, never went to the doctor, and then told my grandfather, well, we have to go home. I broke her foot.
Oh, no.
So she never left again. So that's how I know Pulaski Skyway. So this is, anyway, Pulaski County. Sheriff Eric Higgins is going to do an experiment where he's going to take a part of the jail and unlock the doors and sort of positive reinforcement, right? See if he can reward these inmates with certain privileges. So, Shebnam, you have an overview of jail versus prison versus detention.
Right. Yeah. So like detention and penitentiary are like the same word for prison, essentially. Mm-hmm. But jail is like a temporary place where people go when they get arrested. And so you see in the series, they kind of talk about some guys going on trial and stuff. So this is where guys are when they're before they're sentenced. So when they're waiting for trial, when they're on trial. So they're all going somewhere from here, either getting set free or if they're not guilty you know, going out on bond or bail, or they're going to another like long-term facility.
So I was listening to another podcast and they were saying this is where they go before they go on trial. So no one is convicted, but I don't think that's true. I think some of them are convicted and being waiting to be transferred to prison, right?
I think some of them may be convicted. Yeah. But some of them have been convicted before and they served other time in prison and they're they were rearrested for, or not rearrested, but arrested for something else.
Hmm. Okay. So, so this is a jail. So these people are, and really we see the makeup of the inmate population in this particular unit is, it varies. I mean, you have capital murder charges on some of these people.
Yeah, a lot of capital murder, seems like. I think at one point somebody said like half the inmates there are in for capital murder.
So is capital murder where the death penalty is on the table? Is that what that means?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. But it's not a different kind of murder. Like you're not murdering people at the Capitol.
No, no, no. And actually, funnily enough, we were talking about would people get shot for marijuana in our last podcast?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
One of the guys who's in for capital murder actually killed someone during a bad marijuana drug deal.
So. Yeah. And somebody else, one of the backdoor friends was telling me there's a whole documentary about Humboldt County.
Ah, okay.
Where a lot of that stuff goes down.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's close by to me, kind of.
Right, so, right. Yeah. Okay, so we'll walk through this. Feel free to, I just have very high level notes, so just interject whenever and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Well, one thing I wanted to maybe add a little more before we get started is how they chose these guys. So they vetted the guys basically for a few different things. Basically, they didn't allow anybody to join unless they were okay joining. So basically, like they asked for their consent.
Consent. Yeah.
And then they also didn't allow federal detainees to participate. So if someone was accused of a federal crime, not a like a state crime or a local crime.
I wonder why that was a distinction.
I don't know. I wonder, I'm thinking maybe because they have less control over when they get moved and maybe they'd get pulled out. So, and then also if they were charged with a sexual crime, they weren't allowed to participate.
Oh, okay.
And then there's also something called like a keep separate list, which I don't know exactly what that is, but I assume it's just like they don't play well with others. And those people weren't allowed to participate either.
Okay. I feel like I need a keep separate list for my house. And I'm going to put it, guess who's going on it? Not me, not my husband. The other two. There's only two other people in the house. Okay. That's interesting. So these inmates were hand selected pretty much. Mm-hmm. Did they have to have good behavior? Maybe.
I mean, I assume that's part of the keep separate list, where the ones with really bad behavior potentially. Yeah. But this was like really the criteria that I found, which was through a set of like questions that the local government asked the sheriff about the experiment.
Okay. All right. And I listened to an interview with the filmmakers on what is that podcast from Netflix? You Can't Make This Up or something like that. And the filmmakers were saying that they're a documentary team that already does a lot of work in jails and prisons.
Okay.
So they're very used to dealing with this type of population, which is answers the question of how they earn the inmates' trust so easily.
Yeah,
right. But they really are already embedded in this type of world. But they said that they went around and they found Eric Higgins. Like they found him doing this experiment. They were looking for something. They wanted to look for people who were experimenting with different ways in which people were incarcerated. And so Sheriff Higgins was also on the podcast, and he said that he was looking, and he may have said this in the documentary too, but he said he was looking abroad and trying to see how some of the places in Europe especially handled their prison population. And, you know, if we could model something like that here. So I think he was saying, like, he looked at, I forget what the countries were. Would Sweden be one of them, maybe? I forget.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I did hear a story of a coworker told a story of a guy in prison in Iceland at one point. And that he said he met a guy and they started talking at a bar and he needed a ride somewhere. So the guy was like, oh, I'll give you a ride. And then through the course of conversation, he found out he's actually a prisoner and he has to report back to jail at like 9 p.m. that night. But he got to like have a job and like do things during the day. I was like, okay, that's a little different.
Okay. We see some of that when we do, like, do you watch Love During Lockup and Love After Lockup?
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. We see some of that, like the inmates who are able to go and get jobs and live in like a halfway house situation. They seem to do better.
Yeah.
I think rather than, okay, here's a bag full of your shit and $50, go live in the world, but you owe us, you know, you have to pay restitution. It's like ridiculous. Okay.
Anyway. Yeah.
So, well,
and the film company, the production company made them. So basically, Higgins got paid $60,000, not Higgins himself, but the county got paid $60,000. And then the production company paid like $40 per hour for overtime for some of the security guards who had to stay overtime because of the filming. But other than that, they had like a crazy release. I was reading the contract with, like, you know, they unconditionally and irrevocably released forever the production company for everything under the sun for $60,000. So I was like, the production company got a pretty good deal.
Wow. Yes, they did. And the prisoners received no money.
Yeah.
Which I was like, couldn't you guys put $100 on their books?
Yeah.
Like, come on. They really shared like their lives with you. You know what I mean? I thought that was weird. Okay.
Did you hear about the Simba story about the kid who played Simba? So the kid who had the voice of Simba in the original Lion King, he was offered $2 million for that. And his mom was smart enough to be like, no, we want royalties. So they negotiated and he got $100,000 up front. And then he got a piece of the royalties. And now he has like enough money for his grandchildren.
Really? So
yeah. A little different story than this experiment.
So. Yeah, I guess so. I think, you know, you see actors doing that a lot. Like they'll take their money on the back end, they call it, right? And that's what they mean. And that's a risk.
Yeah.
Because like five people could see your movie or, you know, $2 million every year.
Right.
Okay. So the production company, I have that paid $60,000. All right. So some of the inmates we meet, I'll just, you know, kind of introduce them up front. Mayhem. He's 21. Yeah. He's in for capital murder. He's one of the younger kids. AJ, he's in for capital murder. He shot somebody in a hospital. That's a real tragic story that we'll talk about later. Randy Randall.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
All right. I don't have my shame bell. I don't have my shame bell on this. Okay. So we need to talk about Randy Randall for a second.
Yeah.
I found myself so attracted to him.
Oh, yeah?
Did you or did you not?
Okay, I found myself attracted to the young guys who had the capital murder charges. That was why I liked Mayhem and then Jordan Parkinson. I was like, I would have, you know, been interested in my early 20s.
Shubnam, I would have eaten up that whole like authority figure, true story. I would have eaten that up if I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Randy Randall is so attractive to me. But here's the problem. He's in for domestic assault, which is an immediate turnoff.
Right.
But also, he is younger than me. He is 46 years old. And I'm 46, probably 47. He's my age.
Yeah.
And I thought he was like 65. The way they're talking about him, like, exactly. Oh, old, wise, true story.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. That put things in perspective for me, too. I was like, okay, Lord. Old to you guys is... not very old.
No. Yeah. So he's my boyfriend through the whole thing. True story. Okay.
Nice.
So then we have Squirrel. Not attractive, but nice guy. Fine. Yeah. Whatever. He's an older inmate. He's true stories like Buddy in the beginning. Yeah. Miller's quite a problem. He is.
Gets on everyone's nerves.
He's in for domestic battery. He is 43. That's a hard 43.
He looks 60-ish, at least.
Yes. Yeah. Tiny. I loved Tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny's another, he's obviously, he's a little short. Everybody mm-hmm. knows I always talk about this, but I would have fallen for his bullshit too. 100%.
My nickname for Tiny is Stabby McStabby.
He does stab a lot of people.
Yeah.
He's going to stab you.
Yeah.
And then the person, ironically, that I found the most triggering and that mm-hmm. I hated the most was Eastside.
Ugh. Oh, okay.
Ugh.
God, he's the most entertaining, though, too. He's funny. And I don't
like, why are you being such a douchebag? Oh, yeah. I hated him.
I was like, he still got all his teeth, though, for someone who started smoking meth when they were eight. It's pretty incredible. Yeah.
And I felt like if there's such thing as a jailhouse bro, he was mm-hmm. a bro.
Yeah.
And you know how I feel about bros. Mm-hmm.
He didn't show much growth, although maybe a little. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. All right. So that's who I have. There will be other characters as we go through. But again, we're not going verbatim per episode here. Very high level. Yeah. So Eric Higgins tells us, like, what they're doing isn't working. Right now, the unit's on 23-1, which is their lockdown for 23, free mm-hmm. for an hour. Could you imagine being in a room with somebody for 23 hours a day?
And then just literally only being able to walk in that whatever, like, it is, I don't know, 40 square feet mm-hmm. or whatever. I just can't imagine that.
I mean, I understand that these people are murderers and stabby McStabby. And I'm not making, you know, I'm not saying that they should be let out of jail.
Right.
But I'm just saying, like, they're still humans.
Right.
Like, and you can't expect to treat somebody like that and get positive results from it. Like, lock your kid in a room for 23 hours and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And if they're coming out, we want them to be rehabilitated. We don't want them to come back, like, more messed up. And
no, and we want the men and women who are patrolling the prisons and working inside to be safe.
Right.
So we want to lessen the violence inside the jails. Mm-hmm. So so Higgins goes in and he does his Eric Holder bit mm-hmm. about, you know, I'm trusting you guys. Let's see what happens here. Let's do this. It's very inspirational.
Yeah.
And everybody's real excited. And Randy immediately, he is such a pick me boy. He is such, so me.
Yeah.
So me. I'd be in the front of every class. Oh, pick me. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
He is like, I'm going to step up and take charge of this situation. And everybody's going to be fine with it because I'm 46 years old and I'm an elder.
Well, you see, his pick me's kind of worked because that Deputy Wainwright who picks the jobs, she really does like him and she picked him to do the jobs. So he gets all this outside of cell time mm-hmm. and he gets to work the meals. So he has like control of the extra trays. And I feel like he uses all this stuff to his advantage to like negotiate stuff.
He can run an entire criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
I mean, he is smooth because he's appearing as the good guy. But he's like having people beat up and shit.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's wild. So the young people do not take kindly to this. And we immediately see this clash. And you and I kind of talked about this a little bit when we recorded last time. Like the young guys are like, wait a minute, guy, I need to hire you first. Right. Like that was a Jerky Boys reference. I don't know if anybody under the age of 30 is going to get that. So they're all like, we need a voice. We should have some say in here. Like, we're not going to replace one authority figure with another. Right.
Yeah.
Is basically kind of what they're saying. So now we have this whole scene with David Miller and he's a real weird dude. And the guys just don't like him. And the young guys, I think it might be Mayhem is throwing water on his bed. Do we remember who did that?
Yeah. Mayhem did that. Yeah.
Your boy's mm-hmm. causing a little trouble there.
Yeah. He said he likes to dip his toe into trouble. Yeah.
And you're like, bring it on.
Yeah.
So Miller, fearing for his safety, makes a shank.
Yeah.
And the guards see this and they take him right out of there. Now, one of the problems that I had with this, and I was talking to Amanda briefly about it the other day on one of our recordings, is I feel like they should have had the ability to lock their own doors.
Yeah. But I think like the reason why they didn't is because they would have to like reinstall locks that could lock from the inside. And
it would be a whole thing.
It would be a whole thing, yeah. But Miller, I feel like, you know, they had this whole rule they set out in the first couple episodes. It was like the Vegas rule, like what happens in your cell stays in your cell. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make the shank in his cell. He made the shank out in the open. And I feel like it's because he wanted to get moved, because I don't think he wanted to be there anymore.
Maybe, because he was really upset that Mayhem threw water on his bed.
I almost feel like maybe he's like neurodivergent a little bit, and he didn't quite like the way that he relates to people is not the way common way people relate to each other. And they just, you know, it's not a gentle place to be in jail. So they weren't okay with, you know, what he was doing at all.
How long would you last in jail? Like, do you think that you could figure it out, make alliances and do well? Because I would last a week and I would be crying and trying to like smash my head off a wall.
Really? Like, I don't know. I feel like you seem pretty emotionally intelligent. And I feel like that's...
But I'm also a big baby.
Yeah, me too. That's what I'm struggling with. Like, could I like glom myself onto someone that would be helpful? Or would I just like have to do things I couldn't stomach and need to get out of there? I don't know.
That's a really good point. Like, could I think I could make friends easily. I'm good at making friends.
Yeah.
I think I could sniff out a backdoor friend and kind of cozy up to them. But if somebody hit me, it would be all over for me.
Yeah.
Or if like I had to sleep on a mattress, a thin mattress, my back would be hurting. It would be a whole thing. Wait a minute here.
I know. When I saw some of those fights, I was like, I wanted to cry. I was like, oh my God, I couldn't deal with it.
I will tell you that the fights were hard for me to watch. Mm-hmm. They were really hard for me to watch. I have just an aversion to watching fights. Like even boxing, I can't watch boxing. Like it's really too intense for me. I will watch, are you ready for this? I love the Rocky movies, but I fast forward through the boxing.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I feel like sport doesn't bother me as much because I know there's a referee. I know they trained for this. There's rounds. It's expected. They're like mentally prepared. But I feel like once they just like pull each other into a cell and go at it, it just feels like
it's brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal. In high school, I saw so many of those fights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just really like scarred me. Aww. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Miller gets taken out. Now, throughout the series, Higgins introduces certain privileges, and this is a really interesting thing. So the first privilege that he introduces is he makes the phones free.
Yeah.
And this is wild because Higgins tells us, he's like, and he points out such a good flaw in our system. He says, we know through studies and research that connection with family and people in your life is so important to the rehabilitation of these prisoners. Yet we charge them to make those connections. And a lot of these people are from poor families and they can't afford the money to make those connections. They can't even afford the money to call their lawyers.
Right, right.
It's really bonkers. So like making the phones free, it was like an elation went through the unit. They were just so excited. But it also, Higgins is like, it's going to cause some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. So
yeah.
The challenge that this presents is the free phones cause a huge issue. And after a whole day of fighting, Randy has to step up, my man, true story. And he makes a phone list and an order starts to happen.
Yeah. They figure out how to take turns, you know, and then they also have like time limits of 15 minutes, just like simple, you know, elementary school grade stuff, but like everyone has to buy into it and we don't have chaos. And then all of a sudden there's people are okay.
Yeah. It's so interesting too. I know this is jumping ahead a tiny bit, but it's so interesting what we learn about the inmates through these phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one that we really see is Don.
Yeah.
So he is begging his sister to bail him out on $1,000 cash bond. And I know you have info on bond versus bail. So maybe we should talk about that here.
Sure.
He needs $1,000. And the sister's like, no, last time I did this, like you got out and you started using. And I have to put tires on my car and I can't do it. And he's devastated and really pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah. So bond, so bail is like, basically if you get bailed out, you paid the whole amount yourself or your family. Mm-hmm. And if you get bonded out, it usually means you paid like 10 to 20% of it. And there's a bondsman that puts up the rest, and they usually like have some kind of contract with you for collateral for like property or something like that. Okay. So it, you'll see, so like in the, at the end of the series, you see that it says that Don Don got bailed out because I assume his family paid the full amount, but some of the other guys had a lot higher amounts. And so you see, they say they got bonded out because they probably, you know, didn't have the full amount of cash, whatever, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah. So they paid like smaller amounts and then had, you know, gave collateral or whatever to the bondsman to, so they could get out while they're waiting trial.
Isn't it like 10% or something you have to come up with?
Yeah. It's 10 to 20% depending. Yeah.
I'm covering The Jinx with Tess Brigham, and I'm watching season one because I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. And they arrest Robert Durst, and they're like, okay, your bond is your bail is $250,000. Mm-hmm. And Robert Durst goes, well, I don't have that kind of money on me.
Yeah.
It's like typical like rich guy.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I don't have that on me, but I could make a phone call.
Yeah. I got to go to the bank and get a cashier's check. Yeah, hold on. Yeah.
$250,000.
Yeah.
Like, okay. All right. So I thought that was interesting. So then we also hear a lot more of Tiny's story. So Tiny is, and if you feel like I'm missing things, just pop in.
Sure.
Tiny is only 5'3", mm-hmm. which is still taller than me.
Same height as me.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And he's in for aggravated robbery. Do we have his backstory? Do we know? I know he stabbed some people.
Yeah. So his cousin gave him a knife for the first time when he was 8. And then he was tiny his whole life. And so he'd get bullied. And he said one day he asked a bunch of kids if they could, if he could play football with them. And they said no. And he turned around to leave and they hit him in the head with a football. And so he stabbed him in retaliation. And he's been stabbing people ever since, he says.
I don't mean to laugh, but he is funny. Like, yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Sorry for the person that got stabbed.
Right.
Tiny has a pretty good sense of humor. I would fall for his bullshit, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So he has a son who he is desperate to connect with.
Yeah.
And we get the sense that he's not really gotten to call this son a lot. Maybe he didn't have the money on his books. You know what I mean? So, guys, in order for the prisoners to make the calls, their outside family and stuff have to put money on their books, or they can earn it, I think, through working in the jail. But I don't know if, like, I know you can get jobs in prison that pay, but I don't know if the jail pays people.
And I think when they do, it's like, extremely pathetic. Below minimum wage. So like, I don't think they have much money at all that they're able to actually make with their jobs in prison.
Yeah. So we don't know the situation, but we get the sense that these two have not spoken, and we hear the evolution of the phone calls, and he's calling the son, and it's very heartwarming.
Yeah. And his son, at one point he asks his son, like when he finally gets in touch with him, like what he's been up to. And the son says he went hunting, and he's like, oh, bow hunting. And the son's like, no, with a rifle. And then Stabby McStabby says, oh, I don't like guns. They freak me out. I'm like, okay. All right. I know you like a knife, right?
You like a knife. Yeah. You like a knife. I like a box cutter, you know? Yeah. So, now we get Eastside starting his shit. Now, tell us Eastside's story. Do you remember that one with the snake and everything else that happened?
Yeah. So Eastside, he started apparently doing drugs, doing meth when he was 8. Also, I don't know. 8 is like some magic number for these guys.
Let's pause for a second here.
Yeah.
How does an 8-year-old even know how to do meth? I'm assuming an adult shows them.
I'm assuming that too, but like, I don't know. I was having like a deep conversation with my husband about that last night. Like, he's like, but how could he even like ingest it right? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, he must have been around it his whole life, you know?
It's sad.
And then, you know, maybe his parents or whoever was taking care of him, he'd probably seen them do it a lot, right?
Yeah, I think this is, I might be pulling this out of my ass, but I could have sworn like Robert Downey Jr. talks about this a lot with his father, that his father showed him like how to do drugs and stuff when he was a kid. Do think that happens when the parents are addicts. It's really sad. Anyway, go ahead. So that's sad, but his story kind of has some humorous elements to it.
Yeah. So he's a great storyteller too, I think. He basically says that he one day he gets really amped up. He does a lot of drugs. He takes mushrooms and he decides to go rob a pet store. And he breaks the door with a hammer, goes inside. He decides to, like the Hulk, punch through the cages of all of these mm-hmm. reptiles mm-hmm. and puts a bunch of snakes into a pillowcase he has. He wraps one giant one around himself grabs an iguana. And then he runs out and the cops are coming and he like turns around and like gets, you know, startled by the cops, and the iguana gets startled and the iguana bites his dick. And then he tries to run away from the cops and he's climbing a fence and the big snake starts tightening around him and he falls off and then he like can barely breathe and the cops catch him.
I need surveillance footage of this from inside the PetSmart or whatever it is.
Yeah.
This whole thing go down. You know, somebody has it. It's somewhere out there.
You can't make if he made that up, he's an amazing author.
So Eastside is starting his shit now and he's doing stuff like making drugs, making hooch. He's broing out. He's like, I need some beer and some hooch with my buds.
Yeah.
Let's talk about hooch for a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't, I mean, some people, Amanda's one of them, my sister's another, would argue that the shitty, cheap, sweet wine that I drink is just as horrible as what these guys are drinking out of these bags. But this did not look clean to me.
No.
And it didn't look good.
No. I think they said it's like fruit, the crust of bread.
Oh, and they ferment it. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, Ty says they fermentate it. I was like, all right.
Oh, Ty is Eastside's buddy, right?
Yeah.
Yes. He says, I forgot about him.
He says, you put the crust in and it unfermentates it. I was like, okay, sure.
At first, Ty and Eastside are like a comedic duo.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them a lot. But then Eastside started to bro out. And I was like, he lost me.
Well, you know, when you look at the two of them together, just on the show, you kind of feel like Eastside must be more of the criminal, and you're like, you know, he must be this like worse criminal. But in the end, we learn that Ty has like a long 20-year sentence and Eastside has this 3-year sentence. So
yeah, I think we might need to see Eastside on Love After Lockup. if he's what is it called, conversating with a female. I would like to see that.
Me too.
Or male, whatever. I would like to see it though. I would love to see his story continue.
Yeah, me too.
So he's making hooch. There we see them, like, now we're entering the juvenile delinquent stage, if you will. Mm-hmm. All the juveniles are acting up.
Yeah.
They're smoking. At one point, it's like a college dorm in Eastside's room. I mean, smoke is just billowing out. And they set off the smoke alarms.
That happens because Randy takes a step back because he gets in a
power vacuum.
Yeah. And so the guy that tells Randy, like, you need to step back, you're getting in everyone's business, he says, you know what they call you? They call you Pod Daddy, right? And so
Pod Daddy. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, I was looking up some TikToks and they were saying that, you know, they didn't really touch on any kind of like sexual relationships that were going on in the show, but that, you know, maybe Pod Daddy was a pun for that. So, who knows?
Randy takes real offense to people saying, because I think it's who is it that comes to him? It's not his buddy Squirrel. I forget, but somebody comes to him and they're like, dude, everybody's saying you need to step back and stay out of people's business.
Yeah.
He takes real offense to that.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that was like his cellmate or who that guy was, but yeah, that's the same guy that calls him. Tells him they call you Pod Daddy.
Yeah.
So
Randy's real offended by that. He goes around personally. Amy Archer style. He personally goes around and interviews everybody and asks if they've said this.
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of like, no, I didn't say that. Like, they're not going to admit it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Which was like interesting because I'm like, the fact that it bothered him so much, it made me feel like maybe there is something more to that.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. So he's real, like, you know what it is? I could just sit and listen to Randy talk.
Mm-hmm.
He's a smooth talker. He would talk me right into a cult or something.
Well, a lot of these guys are really smooth talkers. That's like Lovelace too. He's a real smooth talker.
Yes, yes, that's true. And I think Eastside could be, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's funny.
His bro just overcomes everything.
Yeah.
So they're getting in trouble now. And the deputies have to come in. They lock them down. They do this big raid. And they go in there in, like, fucking riot gear.
Yeah.
Like, they are. Could you imagine? I mean, it's just such a – it's a reminder of how militarized everything here is in this country. Like, they go in. They have AR-15s. They have, you know, body armor, head to toe. And I understand it's for their protection.
Yeah.
But it's just such a stark contrast to what we were seeing, which is like a bunch of guys hanging out in the jail cells, you know, like it's really shocking. Hey everyone, stay tuned. Little Miss Recap will be right back after these words.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And then I think that's when they strip search them too, right?
Strip search them.
Yeah.
And is it Mayhem saying, do you like looking at my dick?
Yeah. He said, I went Free Willy style.
So now these guys are like freaking out because they've had, and this was pretty telling, they had this taste of freedom,
mm-hmm.
and now they're like, we don't ever want to go back because they're being locked down for this situation.
Yeah.
So the challenge now is Higgins comes in and he kind of says to them, you must take a vote to snitch on who you feel is not a team player.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be anonymous. And so we see the men like really struggling with this. And in the end, Eastside takes responsibility for the hooch. The man steps up.
And that's where I see his broth a little bit.
He had a little bit of broth. And the vote is canceled. Vote is canceled. And it's interesting because you see a lot of the guys, like, they just refuse to answer. They're not answering.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a code of honor in these things. Like, even all the secret beatings that are happening, they're like, oh, I just fell off the bed.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's
where
crazy.
This is why I wouldn't do well in jail, because I'd be crying saying, you did it.
Exactly.
Like, murder.
Yeah.
So the privilege now so I took a little more detailed notes as we're getting into like the end here.
Yeah. So, but you know, about Eastside, it was really interesting because this whole time he's like kind of this rebel guy that like doesn't give a shit about anyone or anything. And then you kind of see him like really buy into this sort of community and that he likes these privileges. And all of a sudden he does care and he is going to try to do like take accountability and not ruin it for everyone else. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Another thing that was interesting about him is he moves cells and he chooses to. Because he says, me and Ty are not good together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he says, like, I think I'm a bad influence on him. We're, like, getting in trouble together.
Yeah.
And you do see kind of their dynamic is really interesting. Because in the beginning, you can tell Ty kind of looks up to him. Like, this is what you were talking about before. How Eastside appears to be a little more of a badass criminal.
Yeah.
And I think Eastside likes that.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to figure out a way to dial that down with Ty, he just is going to remove himself. And
yeah.
And change the dynamic completely. And so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. You kind of see that with a lot of these guys where they don't know how to dial things down. It's like zero or 100.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Happy with the progress and Eastside taking responsibility. Mm-hmm. They did I miss the part where they get the clock off the wall? I think I did, because that's when they're trying to Eastside's whole thing throughout this is he's trying to make tattoo ink so he could tattoo people.
Yeah.
And they actually take a clock down. That was wild.
Yeah. And then I didn't even know you could like ignite a fire with batteries.
Eastside becomes MacGyver.
Yeah.
And he's like an engineer. Yeah. He suddenly knows how to like create flame from a battery, like a toothpick, a roll of scotch tape. Like he's wow.
Oh, yeah.
He's really smart.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see that all these people are like, you know, smart, articulate. They just,
Ty's kind of like, how do you know all this, dude? And Eastside's like, don't you pay attention in science class? Like, I don't think he realizes that not everybody retains what they learn.
Right.
And the fact that he did and he's able to use it, like, I think he's like really smart.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If only he could use that for good.
Yeah. He's just got a little impulse control problems that
prevent
prevent the good, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. So they're increasing now visitation to twice a week. Mm-hmm. And this is huge. Mm-hmm. So not only are they getting free phone calls, but now they're getting to actually see people. And it's really heartbreaking because some of the guys don't get a visit.
Well, also what I noticed was they said they get two visits a week, Monday through Friday. So I was thinking like, what if somebody has a family
job?
Yeah. And they can't come for some reason. So I thought that was kind of sad. And like, I don't know. It would be nice to give them like a Saturday or something. I don't know.
There are so many things in this country that operate in that way. And it infuriates me. Voting is one of them, you know, before this recent election where we had so many more options, you used to have to vote like Monday through Friday, like 9 to 6.
Right. Yeah.
Like what if you're working?
Yeah.
All right. So, some of the guys don't get a visit. Ty doesn't get a visit. And he cries a little bit in his confessional. And he says things are really tough between him and his mom right now.
Yeah.
So now we meet Crooks. We get a little insight on Crooks, who I really came to like.
A lot. Me too. Yeah.
His sister comes to see him and she says, you know, he was reaching out to me for rehab, but he was so institutionalized that he didn't really know what to do. And he tells her that he's an addict and he can never do drugs again because he can't even do them even a little bit.
Yeah. He's just, he seems like he has such a good heart and he's so like aware of what's wrong with him, but his demons are just like so huge. It's really sad.
It's the classic story. Like he just has no access to resources to help him.
Yeah.
He's literally begging for it.
Yeah.
And he can't get it. Do you know what I mean? Like in this country, with how many people we have in prison, we should have like walk-in mental health clinics on every fucking corner in this country because that's what it's going to take to solve this problem. That's what he needs. Like when you grow up, like let's just take, I don't know, was it Eastside we were talking about doing drugs when he was 8?
Yeah.
What was going on in his home?
Yeah.
That was happening. You know what I'm saying? And if there was intervention then,
maybe exactly,
we wouldn't have gotten to this point. It's like,
well, then we could have actually had healthy relationships with them in our 20s.
Right. Well, then we wouldn't have wanted them. I would.
Exactly.
Have.
Yeah.
Not interested. Not interested. So now we learn that Crooks wants to turn his passion for drugs into a passion for helping people now, which I think is admirable.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm finally sober for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
And he says, I enjoy mentoring these young guys. I enjoy helping people. I enjoy talking to people. Like, this is what I want. And they get a little confessional with Crook's sister. Mm-hmm. And she says, the inmates need stuff like this. This program has helped him so much.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
Now Tiny Son comes to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first he's getting ready for the visit. This is great. So Crooks is helping him shave with some Nair type product.
Yeah.
And all I kept thinking about was welcome to the 80s when you had us putting all sorts of cream all over our legs trying to get rid of hair and it was never working.
Yeah.
And so Crooks is like putting this mixture on him and he's like, it burns, it burns. Yeah, it was really funny.
It was super funny.
And so Tiny says his son is going into ninth grade. He's trying to get back into his life, really, you know, kind of make up with him. So we see them visit. I think this is where we see them visit, right?
We see them visit. Yeah. And
the mother of this son attends as well. Her name is Brianna, but he calls her like Bree Bree, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's very sweet because he starts talking about how sorry he is and he didn't do right by them. And the son, you know, he just takes a beat. You see him like kind of thinking and then he goes, you know what? You're forgiven.
Yeah. That was so beautiful.
And Tiny like starts to cry.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, we need more of this,
You see his whole demeanor kind of change and light up when he can have more of that relationship with the son. And then his son saying he forgives him was just like, you just feel he's so much lighter.
Yeah. It's interesting because sometimes these men, or women, whomever, you know, like in life, you just need to hear that. You need to hear I'm forgiven.
Yeah.
Before you can forgive yourself. And sometimes we don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just have to settle for, okay, that person's not going to forgive me. Mm-hmm. I have to just forgive myself for this and move forward.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I'm thinking of specifically of Ty, who's like heartbroken.
Yeah.
And, you know, like he just has to forgive himself for what he's done to his family and move forward. Now, I'm not talking about his crimes and the people that he's, you know, he has to do a lot more than. Ask for forgiveness there. But in terms of letting your families down, sometimes, you know, we just have to forgive ourselves for that and move forward. So Tiny is really, you know, he's got a new lease on life now. He's excited.
Yeah.
So now there's a new challenge.
Yeah.
New people are going to be coming in.
Yep.
So the reason that Higgins does this is he's like, you know, I have to make it a little less of a controlled environment because that's how it's going to be in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, we're going to have new people come in. It's going to upset the dynamic. This is going to be really tense at first. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Now my man, True Story, gets into a little bit of a heat here because he's helping. I don't know if he's helping Weekly, but he's encouraging all this tournament stuff to happen. All this gambling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there's this new dude, Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
I love the nicknames.
Yeah.
What is that? Weekly and CJ get into a fight now because Weekly was cheating.
Yep. Yeah.
And a fight breaks out and it's bad. This was tough to watch.
Well, first it was just a one-on-one. And so that was like sort of their normal operating procedure. Sure. Not work great, but yeah. But then Weekly just seems like he doesn't want to get over it and he doesn't want to squash it. And he's just kind of like poking at CJ constantly.
Yeah. So then CJ and a bunch of the young guys go in and they beat the shit out of them in a cell.
Yeah. So it's CJ, Roscoe, and another guy called D2. But Roscoe is actually the one who, in the beginning, before the experiment started, he beat up that guy for Randall, who the guy who was mouthing off to the deputy. And so I was like, Roscoe's interesting because I'm like, he doesn't say much, but he's kind of like an enforcer type of person, or he's just doing other people's dirty work, maybe Randall's, I don't know. But it was interesting because I was like, oh, he's the one that keeps beating the people up.
Yeah, he's like the hired hand.
Mm-hmm,
he's True Story's right-hand man.
Right.
The deputies. So I wrote, there's an eerie, like ritualistic feel to this. Like this is not the first time this has happened.
Right.
They know how to get this guy alone. They know like how to, like it's.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Randy's not cool with this.
No.
True Story's like, you don't gang up on somebody. True Story.
Right.
And Weekly's in real rough shape when the deputies come in. Like you can hear him wheezing.
Yeah. But, you know, also even Tiny says too, he's like, these guys were all in the same, had the same gang affiliation. And he makes him comment like they should have dealt with it another way. And I don't know like what that means. Like, cause I don't
doesn't
know.
Doesn't he say, enough. Doesn't he say at some point that guy was OG?
Yeah. He says that too. Yeah. So I don't know if there's like some age, like I respect.
I think what Tiny and Randy are upset about is the ganging up on. I think they were okay with CJ and him hashing out one-on-one.
Yeah.
But I think when it came to the guys essentially jumping him in a cell, they had a problem with
that. Yeah.
So Lieutenant Freeman goes to Sheriff Higgins now. He's like, we've had a problem. And they're sitting in Sheriff Higgins' office and they're reviewing the footage. And Sheriff Higgins is pissed because he's like, all those guys watching, they may as well put in there.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of, wasn't there a famous case where a woman was supposedly murdered in New York, like in broad daylight, and no one did anything about it? And it's like called some kind of phenomenon. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know the case, but like, I like a groupthink kind of
effect or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me look that up. Hold on.
Yeah. But also, I feel like for these guys, it's kind of like if they try to do something to stop it, they might get some heat on them. And I could see why, like, that's a deterrent. Like, everyone's just trying to – no one wants to get beat up, you know?
Right. Oh, here it is. I was right.
Oh, good.
It's called the bystander effect. So it's a social psychological theory that states individuals are less likely to offer help to a victim in presence of other people. First proposed in 1964 after the murder of Kitty Genovese.
Oh, okay.
So she was supposedly like murdered or attacked on a street. She was 28. She was raped and stabbed outside an apartment building where she lived in Queens. And 2 weeks after the murder, the New York Times published an article erroneously claiming that 38 witnesses saw or heard the attack and none of them have called the police. But like that has since been debunked.
Oh, wow.
So, but this whole theory is based on that, like that it's the bystander effect. So, but you're right. I mean, in prison or in jail, who knows what would have happened? What are they going to do? Yell for the sheriff?
Exactly. Yeah.
So he says, Higgins is like, this has been a failure. Like this part of it didn't work. So they locked down the unit and people are pissed.
Yeah.
And they're not happy. And they're like, I can't believe we're going back to this. They start taking people out. The people who were involved in the fight, they take them out. Sheriff Higgins says, I'm removing the culprits. I'm putting everybody on lockdown until I know what's going on in there.
Yeah. Well, before we move on, I think like a little bit before this was when AJ says he's having thoughts of suicide.
Yes. Sorry. I thought that was later, but yes. So AJ, we get his story. So he went to a hospital to visit his friend and her boyfriend was there and he had thought that the boyfriend mistreated her. And so they had beef and he goes out of the room or something and he calls his mom and he's like, I really want to hurt this guy. I really want to hurt this guy. Goes back in and shoots him and kills him. And so he's in prison for this and he has suicidal tendencies. Like he's been saying, you know, when I was arrested, I was bashing my head against everything I could find to try to take my own life. And so they, instead of like getting him, he thought they would up his meds or like get him some additional support. You throw him in solitary confinement.
Yeah. And he's like, there's no mattress. You have nothing but a small blanket. And you're just waiting, hoping that they get you out of there. And I'm just like, I cannot imagine that that's helpful to anyone that's having mental health.
How does that make it better?
Yeah.
And what are you going to, and I think he even maybe says this, like, what are you going to do with the mattress?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was really sad to see him, but he did get to come back, I think, after a short while, which was good. Yeah.
So day 40, they're having a meeting. The sheriff's coming in and he's like, I'm going to give you guys 24 hours. This is kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
To make your case, to argue in front of me. Now, as a lawyer, were you impressed with some of their rhetorical skills?
Yes, especially Lovelace. I was like, wow, that's a, you know, he does a good job. But what was also interesting is they finally actually want to come together and talk and listen to each other.
Yeah, and I think my man True Story starts all that. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. But he's smart enough now to know I need the young guys with me.
Yeah.
And we all need to agree. And we all need to. So they come up with like a write-up system. They create like a mini justice system.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to happen if you break this rule. They're going to assign mentors to new people coming in. Like, it's really impressive.
Yeah. And they're going to have some kind of three strikes sort of situation. Mm-hmm. But like the first couple times you get talked to and you get a mentor, like you said.
Yeah.
And then they also say they want to do an orientation for new people, which I thought was really interesting.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. So now the younger generation are starting to realize, like, we see Mayhem kind of having an epiphany that like maybe these older guys do have something,
right?
Maybe the geriatric 46 year old could actually help me through life.
Yeah.
And so they start, you know, like really having meaningful conversations about like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry I did this, or I'm sorry. It's really cool.
Yeah. Chauncey and True Story's conversation about their fight at one point.
So interesting.
Yeah. And you really got to see Chauncey evolve too, because in the beginning, you just see how he's so hurt because he's kind of had this like traumatic turn of life events where all of a sudden he finds himself in prison and or jail, and he feels like he shouldn't be there. Like, he was into gaming and YouTube mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like by the end of the series, you see that he's sort of like mentally adjusted to where he's at. In the beginning, he's just, you know, really just not okay with it.
I forget what his crime was, because wasn't he saying he was like holed up in his basement playing games and watching YouTube? And then he get radicalized? Am I like,
no, I don't think so. So he had like a whole bunch of charges, but they included like fleeing. And then he had like aggravated battery. He had like a bunch of charges,
but it sounds like he was really isolated in his life before that. And that I remember that like striking a chord with me, thinking mm-hmm. this is happening to so many people, especially during the pandemic.
Oh yeah. That's a good point. You know
what I mean? Who don't really have resources, and they're like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I have a decent house and a decent family, and we were able to quarantine, you know, okay. Yeah. But for many millions of people, that was not the case. Like, right. I remember my sister saying a lot of her friends in New York City were like ready to just flee the world, because they had like two or three kids in like 600 square feet, and they were on top of each other, and the husband and wife are trying to work, or the wife and whatever.
Yeah.
The spouses are trying to work, and everybody's at each other's throats. Like, it's really tough. Or some people, like, I remember just feeling so upset for kids who didn't have a good situation mm-hmm. or people who were in abused. Like the pandemic, I think we really need to, we're going to see the effects of that for a long time.
I think we're still recovering from it. I feel mm-hmm. like, you know, I know people that are still struggling with issues that came up during the pandemic. And then even just our cities, like, I'm from San Francisco and we locked down for a long time. And so the city has not bounced back. Like, it's mm-hmm. hard to find a meal after like 9 p.m. And it wasn't like that before. So
it's
crazy.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, I wonder, we know that the prison situation got worse during COVID, but I wonder about, you know, these young guys who are like mm-hmm. 19, 20 years old. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And as a teacher, like, I'm seeing a lot of kids now that were in 9th and 10th grade. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, just didn't get the education that they needed, because they were like, I mean, my daughters were doing online mm-hmm. school, and it was like a joke. Like, they could shut off their cameras and they were sleeping. And you know, I remember I was running around like a crazy person, like, get that camera on, wake up, you know, like trying to get them engaged, but it's tough.
Well, I knew some folks who had kids who were just sort of at the end of high school. And those kids who ended up having to go to college towards the end of the pandemic, they had needed a lot of like adjustment time. Like, I remember one set of parents having to go kind of stay there with their kid, because the kid's coming from being quarantined and now they're supposed to just live on their own. It's really hard.
Yeah. My kids were 14 and 15. Like, they spent 14 and 15 in the house.
Yeah.
It's so wild. So wild. So we see Randy making amends with Chauncey. Like you said, they have a heart to heart. Randy tells this guy, you don't want
my life to be your life. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want this to be your life.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really heartwarming.
Right.
Now the sheriff returns to hear them out, and it doesn't go great at first. They can't get it together.
Yeah.
But then Tiny kind of sells it to them. Mm-hmm. And he tells them about the mentor program. He doesn't like the word pod boss, and Sheriff Higgins doesn't like it. And they say, yeah, you know, we're thinking mentor. And once Higgins hears mentor, he softens. Really, he does.
Yeah. I like how Tiny said, I call it a civilized, I'll use a civilized word. And he says mentor. It's like, okay. Yeah.
So they say they didn't take this serious. Like, Higgins and the other guy are in there. And the inmates are like, we didn't take this seriously before now. But now, you know, I think we have a plan. And Higgins and the other guy are talking to each other, and they're like, this is so great. Like, we're so happy the way they've come together. So they leave, and he leaves them hanging. He's like, I got to think about it.
Well, because I think Higgins is also struggling with, well, like, why didn't you guys take this seriously before?
Yes.
But I also feel like the whole thing was only 6 weeks. And I've thought about, like, hard things or even big changes that have happened in my life. And I certainly don't, like, resolve it all in the first 6 weeks. So I thought that was a little, like, he was being a little unreasonable in, like, wanting them to have, like, started to, like, create their long-term plans in, you know, the first, you know, before the end of the 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I think another thing is, a lot of these men are of color. A lot of them are from poor backgrounds. They have a distrust of authority.
Yeah.
Like, somebody comes in and is like, we're unlocking the doors, and they're immediately like, what's the catch?
Right.
What are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, so they really had to overcome, like, he had to earn their trust as much as they had to earn his.
Yeah. And Lovelace says that. He said in the beginning, like, all I hear is, we're going to open the doors. We're going to wait for you guys to mess up so we can tell everyone this is why these clowns are behind bars. Right.
Exactly. And, yep. Yeah. Exactly. So in the end, Higgins decides to continue the experiment, and we learn at the end that he is rolling this out to other units in the prison. And it's, you know, it's kind of been a success. Now, there has been some controversy around it. We talked a little bit about that with the 60K, and they didn't pay the prisoners. But also, you had some people calling the local news being like, are the prisoners just being let out?
Yeah.
Okay, nobody said that. Yeah. So, like, the community is kind of like, and this is the worst parts of us, right? Like, the community are like, we need to treat these guys worse. What are you doing? And to some extent, I understand that. Like, if God forbid, you know, something happened to my daughter and her capital murder dude was in jail, and I saw him on TV, like, getting to chill out and drink hooch and smoke with Eastside, I'd be pissed off.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I really felt for that mom. It was like the mother of the person that Jordan Parkinson murdered, who in that the, like, I guess, marijuana drug deal gone wrong. But she says she couldn't, like, you know, she's like, I couldn't get through one episode, and which I totally understand. But then you sort of see his story, and that's what's tricky about this, is it, like, humanizes these prisoners. Which,
what is his story? Do you have it?
I mean, he not like, I don't have his backstory, but he just, like, I think it's just that, like, all of these guys were really humanized throughout this, and we're not used to, like, we're not, it's hard psychologically, like, hard for us to get comfortable with the fact that people can be really, do really bad things and then do good things. And that's oftentimes, like, really hard for people generally.
Yeah, and there are many people who just reoffend. You know, we don't know what's going on, and we don't know why. And certainly there are people who come from strong backgrounds and still end up in this situation. But more often than not, I feel like it's mental illness, it's, you know, social issues, like societal barriers.
Right.
Or it's addiction. Like, that is, I have a cousin who's been in and out of jail most of my adult life, and she is an addict, and every single crime that she commits is connected to feeding her addiction. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think, if they put her in rehab for a year, you know what I mean? Like, would that have made all the difference instead of keep throwing her in jail where she has to
get kind of white knuckled
through this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's all those issues, and then there's some of the systemic issues. So like, I actually went back and watched that Vice documentary with Obama that you talked about. Mm-hmm. And at one point they talk about how they had the war on drugs and these mandatory minimum sentences. Mm-hmm. And it was that there was 100 grams of cocaine would be treated the same way as having 1 gram of crack.
Yep.
And so you see a lot of
who does that target?
It's, you know, black people right, and
the community, yeah. The black community was sieged by the crack epidemic. And that's how this happens.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you see these, for 1 gram of crack, you could go to jail for a minimum of 10 years to life. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you kind of compare that to, you know, the documentary we all watched over the last, like, you know, month ago or so with Quiet on the Set. Mm-hmm. And you have Brian Peck going to, you know, raping or molesting Drake Bell for years, multiple times.
Admitting to it.
And he gets letters of support, a mm-hmm. sentence of 7 years, and he can mm-hmm. work when he comes out. Yeah. So it's just really crazy.
It's really crazy. And was it Reagan who started the war on drugs, right?
Yeah, he signed it into effect, but I know that there was...
But Clinton didn't do anything to help the situation.
No, he made it worse. Yeah. And I believe Biden was instrumental in passing one of the bills in Congress under Clinton as well. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I think Obama tried to work to undo some of that, but mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, what progress he made. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy that special?
Yeah, it was really interesting.
It was really interesting, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So did you want to tell us quickly what happened to some of these guys? Do you have that?
Well, yeah. One of the interesting but sad stories is that Crooks, who, you know, he came out with a positive outlook. He wanted to be a mentor, all that. He went to Florida, lived in a sober house, was mentoring people. But then I saw a news clip from like a week ago where his sister said that he actually got arrested again in Florida. So, I mean, to me, like, I was actually thinking, I was like, there's so much good in him. But even before I saw that, I was like, he just is so like addicted. I just felt like mm-hmm. it was going to be a real uphill battle. And then you kind of hear that, you know, he did struggle with that a bit.
I think when you're dealing with addiction, and this is something that, you know, I've been thinking about, is the battle is going to be won inch by inch, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like, you can't expect Crooks, somebody who's been addicted as heavily and as long as he has, to yeah. come out of jail knowing he didn't get the proper detox, right? Knowing that yeah. he didn't go through all the stuff yeah. and just be fine forever. But what I hope that somebody in his life is saying to him is, you know, look, you were sober for almost a year or whatever yeah. it was. And that's yeah. progress, right? And if yeah. you stumble, that's okay. That's yeah. why they have all those chips in AA, and you can yeah. keep getting, you know, that 1 year mm-hmm. chip, however many times you need to get it.
Yeah.
Because as long as you make progress, you're going forward, and you might have to make that progress inch by inch, but it might happen.
Yeah. And it's not always linear. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. it's going to be like 2 steps forward, 1 step back, but yeah. you know, you just keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Any of the other guys? I think I have something too.
Not anything that wasn't covered in the end.
Okay. I didn't write down the end like an idiot, but yeah.
Well, so I can go. So I can talk through some of that. So, okay. So Randy is still in jail awaiting his trial, but he's trying not to be the pod boss anymore, they say. East Side,
you know that you and Amanda and Steph, all you guys need to keep a lockdown on me, because I would start yeah. writing to Randy.
So then you could be on Love During Lockup.
This would happen.
Yeah. And then so East Side got transferred to a prison to finish his 3-year sentence. And then he's still tattooing people. He got a nice little diamond tattoo on his hand that he did for himself there.
Aww.
Yeah. And then Ty, his cellmate, was transferred to prison for his 20-year sentence. So I think he got convicted of a murder charge, so he has a pretty long sentence. And that's, you know, we touched on this earlier, where it's sort of surprising to see him with such a longer sentence than East Side, based on what yeah. we saw in the documentary. And then Don Don got bailed out by his family. So that's good news. I guess he's awaiting trial outside. AJ, who was the one who had to go into solitary for suicide watch, he was sentenced to life plus 15 years, and he's awaiting his transfer to prison. And then
that sounded like a case of impulse control, right?
Exactly,
like what happened in AJ's life?
Yeah.
That when he becomes angry, he knows it because he called his mother and was like, I'm very angry.
Yeah.
But like,
and it also seems like he gets really depressed.
Yeah.
You know, and that's real hard too. And then Mayhem, he's waiting for his trial in the jail as well. It kind of seemed like he got moved from the unit though, because he was talking about, you never know when you might get moved. Don't like, you know, mess around in there. So I thought maybe they moved him because he did something. And then Chauncey, who was the one who had the touching conversation with Randy at the end, he bonded out. So I guess his family put up part of the money, like we talked about. And he has to wear his ankle monitor. And he's out though, waiting for trial.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Parkinson, by the way, has like a huge TikTok following. He's
the guy with the little blue beads on the end of his hair.
He's a pretty handsome guy. And so he's got all kinds of admirers on TikTok. But he's bonded out also, awaiting for his trial and fighting his case. Another interesting thing on TikTok is TikTok has a whole like section of, prison like recipes you can make with commissary. So at certain parts in the documentary, you saw them like making little kind of interesting odds and ends. And so apparently there's like all these TikTok videos about recipes you can make with the commissary stuff.
Very interesting. BDFs, you know what you need to do. So I have a little update on Jordan Parkinson.
Okay.
So there's this article that is from, what is this? Woman in Home. I don't know what this magazine is. So it is 100% true. Okay. In the series, Jordan Parkinson was one of the inmates serving his sentence for murder, booked in April. He was 18. So Haley Shackelford, I think that's the mother of Jadon, believed that there were more people involved in her son's killing. So in December 2022, Little Rock police arrested two more suspects, Grant Nickel and Evan Franklin, connected to this murder case. And they were charged with first degree murder and terroristic acts.
Yeah.
As the inquiry moved forward, the story of a drug deal gone wrong was revealed. Further investigations revealed that Evan Franklin, this was in Arkansas Online or whatever. Further investigations revealed that Evan Franklin actually fired the shot that killed Jadon. Jordan Parkinson, however, was at the place along with Grant Nickel. So he is cooperating with prosecutors to try to get his sentence reduced to turn the other guys in.
Yeah.
So there we go. So hopefully Jadon's mother gets some, some relief there in
knowing
that this guy's at least trying to help
get
these other two caught.
And he wasn't the one that it wasn't from his hand that her son died.
But I just want to be very clear. I can totally understand where she's coming from.
Of course.
Because I would be on fire on my couch
if
the person who killed my child was
chilling
out and eating Cheetos with his feet up and playing checkers.
For sure. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts?
So Higgins, I looked up him a little bit. Higgins, he's the he got elected in 2018, and he's the first Black sheriff in the county's 200-year history.
Wow.
So he's backed by the Little Rock NAACP. So he's getting quite a bit of heat from the Netflix series, but he was elected for a second term in 2022. And so I think he's not going to be up for re-election again until 2026, but, that'll be interesting.
From what I'm hearing from his community, I worry he won't get reelected. And that's a real shame.
Yeah.
Because he should.
Yeah.
Because we need to try things like, again, if the prisoners are treated better, like you said, and they come out and they're reformed, it's a better, like they're going to come out anyway.
Yeah, wouldn't exactly.
Be released with some sort of life skill
and communication skills. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just, it betters the entire population around them. It gives them a fighting chance.
Yeah. So there's this restaurant in San Francisco called Delancey Street, and they pretty much exclusively hire like ex-cons and recovering addicts. Mm-hmm. And they live and work in like this Delancey Street Foundation residential treatment facility nearby. But I actually went to that restaurant and it was really good and they were wonderful. So it's kind of interesting to see that, like, that you can actually set something like that up successfully. Yeah. And it works. And I think, you know, we need more of that. Because another thing that came up in the Vice documentary, they said that for most of the 20th century, the prison population was flat at like about 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it just skyrocketed over the second half of the 20th century.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know if it was like 2 million or 3 million or some kind of number by the time that the Vice documentary happened, which is already like almost 15 years ago. So, or 10 years ago, I'm not sure. But it's just like crazy how many more people are in prison. And, you know, they're going to come out.
Well, it's a business now. It's privatized. Yeah, so in my area, I live right near Wilkes-Barre, PA, which is where mm-hmm. Love During Lockup has taken place. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Did you hear about that Kids for Cash scandal that happened here a couple of years ago? It was all over the news.
I didn't know.
There was this big ring in Luzerne County where two or three judges mm-hmm. were getting kickbacks from a private mm-hmm. detention center for juveniles.
Oh, wow. Oh,
because they were sentencing these kids.
Oh, no.
And it was all revealed and the judges are in jail.
Yeah.
And I actually went to school with one of their daughters. And I mm-hmm. remember she was like in denial for a very long time. She was like, you know, my dad didn't really know much about that. And now she's like, no, my dad knew about it. Like, it's not good.
Yeah.
It really was a big scandal. And a lot of kids' lives were completely ruined by this.
I'm sure. That sounds mm-hmm. super horrible. And then I don't know, that's a pretty risky move to do that as a judge, because I'm sure prison is like the last place you want to be as a judge.
Yeah. So now they're in prison, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the privatization of jails and prisons is a big problem. Mm-hmm, and it's just become a moneymaker.
Yeah.
And it's really scary. We need intense prison reform here. I don't know what the answer is. You don't know what the answer is, but
no.
Something needs to happen, because we can't keep going this way. You can't lock up half of our population.
Yeah. My husband runs a nonprofit called Secure Justice, and they do some work like this. I'm not super familiar with all of it. There's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Well, and one of the things that Obama always talked about is you can't have marijuana be legal in some states and people in that state in jail serving sentences for having marijuana. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really crazy. I think they're addressing that now, but it was like, okay.
Yeah.
And so it's legal now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy to think. It's because here in California, it's been legal for, I mean, at least since before COVID, it was legal. So it's just crazy to know that some people, you know, are still in jail 5 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Shubnam, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you like how I'm constantly like, do you have that story? Do you have that story? Do you have those facts? Someone here clearly does more research than me.
No.
Guys, thanks. If you haven't already, check out our Facebook group, Backdoor Friends. I did that interview with, do you watch Married at First Sight?
I don't watch the show regularly, but I did see the interview. He was great. And it was so fun. Yeah.
So I did the interview and we had like 60 people join Backdoor Friends like the day it came out. So I'm like,
oh, wow. That's awesome.
Oh my God, I might have to get control of this. I don't know what's going to happen.
That's awesome.
So we'll see. It might turn into like a Fight Club, Lord of the Flies situation. I don't know. It might be like Unlocked. We're just going to see what happens. See if a hierarchy develops.
I might have to get on the MAFS bandwagon then.
It's a heartbreaking journey. I don't know. Okay. It's like, I've been a lifelong Eagles fan. I often, compare it to that, because it's like you love it, but you know it's gonna break your heart because it's terrible.
Yeah,
so that's kind of where we're at. Like, just reform needs to happen and it's not happening. So
interesting. Yeah, I heard you guys talk about how there is like zero there was like none of the couples lasted basically this time. Yeah.
No, none of them last. It's the same production company that does Love is Blind.
Okay.
And I see a common thread where they're just hiring these young, or they're recruiting
Yeah.
They're recruiting these young people. And mm-hmm. Michael even said, he's like, you know, I don't know. I'd like to get married someday, but I wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if, you know what I mean? That's not a good, I'm glad they gave him to us. We loved him on the show. Thank God he was there.
Yeah.
But I would want, in the earlier seasons, I feel like people were signing up for it because they wanted to get married.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a thing anymore.
Well, I think the more popular the show gets, the more people just want to go on it. Yeah. But I also feel like if they want people that are really interested in getting married, they probably need to choose people a little bit older.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Then Daddy Lachey comes over and scolds you for signing up for the show for clout. So anyway, so that interview's there. I'm going to be talking with Steph about Baby Reindeer. Did you watch that?
That's going to be exciting. Yes. It was so amazing, emotional.
Ugh.
All the emotions.
Ugh. I was just episode 7 when he talks to his parents. I don't want to give more away than that.
Yeah.
I was sobbing so hard. I was trying not to shake the bed while Timmy was sleeping.
Aww.
I was like,
just
stifled sob. Yeah. It was so raw. As a writer, I just enjoyed it on every level, how raw it was and how it was so good. So good. And so we're going to be covering that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting that the story's actually about him, the main actor. It must have been so therapeutic to act it himself too.
Yeah. I guess it started as a one-man play.
Mm-hmm.
This is the nerdy writer in me. I love this kind of shit to know what kind of mode people are telling these stories through, what kind of genre. So he started as a one-man play.
Okay.
And he used a stool to symbolize Martha, and he would move the stool to various locations on the stage.
Oh, interesting.
Throughout. And I need to see this. I need to see it in a play form. I need to see
That's so fascinating.
And somebody, got a lot of rewards and it got a lot of buzz, and somebody saw it and they were like, do you want to develop this for Netflix? And he was like, of course I do. So.
Yeah. And you see him. Oh yeah. You see him kind of break into this authenticity, and then that's where his success comes, which I think is a really beautiful part of the story too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that I learned as a writer is I can't write fiction. I can't write in somebody else's voice. It has to be me. Yeah. Even when I'm writing fiction, all my characters sound and look like me, because that's just what I know. I'm not very imaginative. I write what I know.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. So we're doing that. We're covering MILF Manor. I mean,
excited about that.
Get on that train.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's it. Seeking Sister Wife and stuff. And on Patreon, guys, we're doing Love During Lockup. We're doing 90 Day Love in Paradise with the sperm donor, which is wild. Total creep. And we're doing Sister Wives.
Exciting. I'm interested to see, you guys bring Sister Wives back. I know it's been a tough time, but it'll be also positive to have that back.
You know what? It felt good. We recorded our first one and it felt really good. I was I'm glad to be back with these idiots.
Yeah.
Very, very happy to have. I have so many places to put my rage now. I have Garrick Merrifield, I have Cody, and now I have Kyle on 90 Day Love is Blind. Love is Blind. Love in Paradise.
Yeah.
So plenty of it to go around.
Nice. Very cool.
All right. Shubnam, thank you so much for joining me. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I had a great time.
All right, guys. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.